Hello and welcome to the XCast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 44, where we'll be discussing episodes Never Again and Memento Mori. This is the X-Files analysis in the run-up to the new series. I'm your host, Clara Cook, and with me is Darren Mooney. Hello, Darren.
Hi, Clara. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
I'm grand. Looking forward to talking about these two episodes, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, they're both very Scully-focused, so it's good that they're kind of twinned together. So the first episode that we're covering is called Never Again. This episode was first shown on the 2nd of February 1997. It's season 4, episode 13. And the brief synopsis of the story is that Scully feels a bit disillusioned with the way that her life is going, has a little bit of an argument with Mulder, and Mulder goes off on vacation, partly because of the recent health scare that she's had in the previous episode. She decides to go off and pursue her own line of inquiry and becomes involved with a man whose tattoo talks to him and tells him to be violent and to murder people. So Darren, what did you think of this rather strange episode?
I have to say, I absolutely adore Never Again. Never Again might just be my favourite episode of The X-Files and one of my favourite episodes of television ever made. It is notable for being the last episode of The X-Files before the recent revival to have been written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong. And it sort of, it taps into one of the great things I like about Morgan and Wong when they write, whether it's for The X-Files, for Space Above and Beyond, or even for Millennium. There's a sense that their writing is deeply personal, that it's touching on themes that are very important to who they are and where they are at that moment in time. And one of the things that really resonates with me about Never Again is this idea of a midlife crisis. It's the idea of reaching a point in your life where you've been doing something for a long time in service of an ideal that isn't necessarily yours. And there's one of the recurring themes of the episode is that Mulder repeatedly stresses that the X-Files are like his life's quest. And like, there's this idea that Scully has given, at this stage, 4 years or 3.5 years of her life to that, despite the fact it's not normally her cause. And it feels like, while not all of our lives and careers involve being abducted by aliens and chased by the government while, you know, fulfilling somebody else's dream, I think that when you reach a certain age, you sort of see that point where you've given your life in service of something that maybe wasn't what you had hoped to do initially when you were a child, and maybe even as a young adult, that your life took a certain turn or a certain path that you didn't expect it to go on. And then you find yourself asking, well, first of all, you know, is this really where I want to be? And second of all, is this where I want to stay for the remainder of that? And one of the things that I really like about Never Again is it's that episode for Scully. And I suspect that a large part of that might have come from Morgan and Wong, who at this stage, like, they left the X-Files during the second season to go off and do their own show, Space Above and Beyond. That was cancelled and they were brought back in on the fourth season. And a recurring theme of that is the sense that they are maybe a little uncomfortable with how intertwined they've become with the X-Files, with, say, a show that, you know, they didn't create, and a show that they wanted to leave and end up going back to. And I think that, like, there's something really beautiful about the way that Never Again sort of explores this idea that Scully, while her life has become the X-Files, it isn't the life that she wanted. And there's a sense of, like, a need to act out and rebel and to experiment and to sort of to broach. And I really, really, the episode really resonates with me. It really sort of speaks to, I think it speaks to sort of a feeling that a lot of people have had when they get to that point in their lives where they're like, well, is this it? Is this what I'm doing now as a grown-up for the rest of my life?
I actually understand what you're saying, and I do agree with you that it's a useful story for Scully to question why she's on the X-Files and is this really what she wants, compared to, for instance, Mulder, who's wholeheartedly devoted to it and who the X-Files kind of chose him, you know, with the abduction of his sister, whereas Scully very much chose the X-Files initially. It's not one of my favourites. I struggle to like it, I think, as much as you, partly because I feel it suffers from the running order of the episodes in season 4.
Oh, it does. It definitely does.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know when it was supposed to originally be aired, but I feel that it should have been aired after Memento Mori.
Or long before Leonard Betts.
Or long before Leonard Betts. In fact, actually, Scully acting out and sort of saying, this isn't what I chose. I'm not sure this is what I want, I think would have been better even in earlier season. It comes a bit late now. I also feel that the comparisons that the episode makes between Ed Gerst, the poor man with the tattoo, and Scully are quite different. Ed Gerst has really lost everything. You know, he's lost his wife, he's lost his kids, he's lost his job. Scully, although she loses a lot in the course of the X-Files, and although she suffers a lot, at this point, I personally feel she has a very interesting life. She's an exciting life. And granted, Mulder is a bit of a jerk, and I feel he's unnecessarily nasty to her in this episode, even before she starts rebelling. The comment about him saying that he's going to organise a multimedia light show to keep her her interest in the interrogation of a suspect actually made me laugh. It's pretty funny, but it's also a really nasty thing to say. So don't get me wrong, she's got plenty of stresses and strains, but she's also got a very exciting life. You know, she's got to explore lots of scientific phenomena. She's got, you know, to go on many trips doing investigating lots of different crimes and mysteries. So I feel that she's not as much a lost soul as Ed Gers is. So in a way, when she started getting involved with Ed Gers, I was like, oh, Scully, you know, come on, man. Like, don't be doing that. I also feel it's an interesting way of rebelling. Her way of rebelling is to get a tattoo and to sleep with somebody. And at this point, Mulder and Scully's relationship is not a romantic one. And so for me, it feels like a strange way of rebelling from Mulder. Perhaps the scriptwriters could have found other ways in which for her to really push out on her own.
It's kind of interesting that you should sort of bring all that up, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there. And I would argue that, like, I think Scully has, I would contend, lost and surrendered a lot in terms of the X-Files. I think that, like, if you look back even at the first season episodes, like, say, Squeeze and Tombs, where she was, like, where you had this idea of Scully was a young up-and-comer who had friends who weren't in the X-Files. You know, the early first season where she would have dates outside, where she would have a life that extended beyond Mulder. And then gradually as the show went on, I think she sort of lost that. But not only did she lose that, she was abducted at one point and experimented upon. This episode was really intended and written without fitting into the cancer arc. In fact, I think Glenn Morgan, the writer, was really upset when he found out that the broadcast order had been shuffled, because he felt like it minimised this idea of a midlife crisis Scully was going to by allowing the audience to say, well, look, it's just the fact that she's got cancer, she's facing her mortality. Mulder really takes her for granted. I feel like you're right when you say Mulder is exceptionally mean to her here, where he's like, you know, I'll arrange for that multimedia light show to keep you interested. Or the bit where he rings up to check on her because she stays at the same hotel, because they always stay in the same hotel. Or even the really condescending bit where, you know, Scully tells him the case is closed because she's actually done the work that he asked her to do, even after she said that it was demeaning and he was not her superior. Even after that, he makes a point to say, well, look, who's the agent in charge there? Because I'll call them. It's a very cynical take on the relationship, but I don't feel it's unfair. I feel like, in some ways, the X-Files tends to valorize Mulder's obsessive qualities and Mulder's sort of, like, Mulder's idea of himself on a hero's journey. And I feel like Never Again is the flip side of that. It's basically, well, look, if you treat Mulder as this sort of iconic hero who's on a hero's quest to confront his father, the cigarette-smoking man, or Bill Mulder, or whoever, or expose this conspiracy, or lay open the truth after devoting his life to living and slaving away in the basement, that, like, what does that make Scully in comparison to that? Like, what does Scully's life quest amount to? Like, one of the things that I like about The X-Files as a show is that the writers who worked on The X-Files tended to have unique sort of voices. Never Again is a beautiful episode for Morgan and Wong to say goodbye to their version of The X-Files, which I think if you look at the scripts that they've written, so obviously stuff like, say, One Breath or Beyond the Sea, like, I think Morgan and Wong have always worked better with Scully and have always been sort of more sympathetic to Scully as a protagonist than they have been to Mulder. And I think that, like, Never Again is that taken to the nth degree. Because one of the issues with the Mulder and Scully relationship, this is maybe a little bit controversial, is that I would argue that Scully is the single best thing that has happened to Mulder, in that she grounds him, she provides him with validity, she challenges him, she keeps him sane, she forces him to adhere to standards, she prevents him from going off the rails. But on the other hand, I would argue that Mulder is the single worst thing that has happened to Scully, in that he has basically forced her to give up all her friends, to give up her career outside of the X-Files. Her involvement with him has left her, as we find out, it gives her cancer, but also leaves her sterile. You know, she ends up later on with a child that she ends up rearing on her own because Mulder has vanished completely. I think that there is an argument, and I think Never Again makes it quite convincingly, and I don't think unreasonably unfairly, maybe a little harsh, but that, like, Scully's relationship with Mulder is not necessarily really healthy for her.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things about the episode that I did really like, I have to say, although I don't enjoy it as much as other ones. It's not one of my favourites. I feel personally that if they were going to use an episode to explore Scully's life choices, perhaps maybe one of the things that I'm upset about is that it's only ever one episode, and I feel that as a character, her psychology isn't delved into enough. I mean, it is delved into. There are fairly a lot of episodes focused on her, but they almost always have to do with her health or to do with religion. And like you said, this one isn't really about either of those. I think one of the things that I liked about this episode, though, is that Glenn Morgan and James Wong are very good at writing women. And I think one of these things that I did like about this episode is this: there is an element of gender politics in it. So everything you described about what Mulder has done in Scully's life, you know, I actually don't think it's uncommon. Women often have had to sacrifice a lot of their personal happiness and a lot of their lives for the men that they live with or work with. And I think that one of the things about this episode that I loved is when Scully says, and she says it several times in the episode, this isn't about you.
Yeah.
And that's something that I have said on and off to men in my own life, you know, this isn't about you. Because when you are working with or involved with or friends with or related to strong male dominant personalities, women often, their voices can often be drowned out and you have to fight to be heard. And that's kind of what Scully's saying, like, this isn't about you. Like, this was about me and this was about my experience and this is about how I feel. And it's a very good ending. Mulder doesn't know how to respond to that. He's just sort of, he stops in the middle of a sentence. And I think that's one of the best scenes in the entire X-Files. Even though I don't actually love this episode, the last scene of this episode is one of the best I've ever seen, where they just sort of sit there in silence and kind of look at each other. They're at a loss, you know.
Yeah.
She wants to assert herself and he doesn't know what to do with that. I also like that this episode is about Scully deciding not to care about the approval of Mulder. She talks to Ed Gers in the bar about worshipping her father and wanting his approval. And then she kind of echoes that, you know, later on in her life with wanting the approval of Mulder. You know, she hides things from him. She hides weakness from him because she wants to appear strong.
Yeah.
She wants his approval. And I just felt like a very female thing to me.
This is basically her sneaking out to have the cigarette in some way, shape or form. It's to have something that is only hers, which is an image that Morgan and Wong come back to. I mean, they seeded the idea of the cigarette in Beyond the Sea as well. They have a very good sense of who Scully is, I think.
What did you think of Rob Bowman? So Rob Bowman directed this episode. What do you think of Rob Bowman's direction?
I really like Bowman as a director. I'd argue he's one of the best directors who worked on the show. And obviously he directed the feature film as well. This episode was originally planned to be directed by Tarantino. It was going to be directed as a sweeps episode. That didn't work out because of stuff involving the Directors Guild, and Bowman stepped in. And it has that sort of weird, high-energy, pulpy element to it. Like, I love Mark Snow's store. Like, there's a wonderful sequence where when Jurs attacks the woman living downstairs, the camera pulls back out of the apartment as Doesn't Somebody Want to Be Wanted plays over the soundtrack. And the camera tracks downstairs in what appears to be like a stealth one, or it's got a cut in the middle where it transitions down to the basement. It's just a beautifully shot episode. And even as you mentioned that closing shot, which I think you could argue is the closing shot of Morgan and Wong's versus the X-Files, is the camera pulling back out of the doorway, giving Mulder and Scully sort of a bit of space. Like, ironically, I would argue that the eighth season closes with a similar image, with the camera pulling back out the door, giving Mulder and Scully some space in a much joyful or much more sort of optimistic conclusion to their arc. Like, I really, really love the look and feel of this episode. And even Mark Snow's sort of synth-heavy, sort of like pulpy, trashy, sort of late-night movie kind of synth-crazy score, the stuff that happens, like, when Jodie Foster as a psychopathic tattoo starts going nuts.
What did you think of Jodie Foster as the voice of the crazy Betty tattoo?
This is a very brave role for her, because obviously she, you know, that the famous story about Ronald Reagan, the guy who shot Ronald Reagan did so because he thought that Jodie Foster told him to. Her taking the role in Never Again was a very brave thing for her to do as a performer. I think it's also a very clever thing to do, because obviously Scully is in many ways like a spiritual successor to obviously Foster, one of Foster's most iconic roles, Clarice Starling from Silence of the Lambs. But I think she's great. She doesn't appear on screen, but you can hear her taking bites out of the scenery. It's a great performance.
I mean, she's both like kind of cringeworthy, like, I mean, deliberately cringeworthy, and also kind of threatening and creepy. It's a really good performance, really good performance. All just using her voice. So, and I mean, I knew it was her, but when I first watched it as a teenager, I didn't know it was her. So she's recognisably enough as Jodie Foster, but not too recognised as Jodie Foster that would distract you from the story. I also like the idea of the actual chemical in a tattoo making somebody kind of crazy.
But what I really like about the episode is the reveal at the end that it didn't. Like, at the end, Mulder reveals that the levels of ergot in his blood were not strong enough to cause the hallucinations, that Ed basically wasn't. Like, it initially appeared like he was being manipulated by the ergot in the rye. But it turns out that no, he was just, it was his misogyny, his internalized misogyny, his hatred of women, that had sort of turned into something cancerous and sort of metastasized and materialized in the form of like this voice inside his head.
Yeah, I like the idea at the end of it, it's revealed that it's not actually the chemical in the the tattoo, but I did like the idea of the sort of theory that it's a chemical,
yeah.
You know, that getting a tattoo can be like
dangerous,
you know, because I mean it's obviously not, but like so often, you know, people get tattoos all the time, but the idea that, you know, you might get a tattoo that's actually gonna control you, that something you've put on your skin is gonna end up leading you to you destroying your own life. It's very wildly dramatic. It felt very X-Files, yeah. Actually.
So remember, kids, tattoos will ruin your life.
Especially if they're of women. So without much ado, we will be moving on to Memento Mori. So Memento Mori is season 4, episode 14. It was directed by Rob Bowman and written by four people: Chris Carter, Vince Gilligan, John Shabazz, and Frank Spotnitz. So a brief sort of summary of what the episode's about. Scully discovers that she's got a tumour in her nasal cavity, and her threat to her health prompts both Mulder and Scully to review the circumstances of her abduction and to pursue a line of inquiry to try and find out whether other women who've been abducted have the same cancer, and if there's possibly something they can do to treat her cancer. So, Darren, what did you think of this episode?
I'm going to continue my trend of being hugely controversial in my opinions of these episodes and say I am not a huge fan of Memento Mori. I think it's an okay episode. I think it's a weaker version of what was done with One Breath in the second season. And I think that its success and its popularity led to some of the weaker episodes in the later seasons. So I think you can trace a very clear line, for example, between the way that Memento Mori writes, say, the dynamic between Mulder and Scully to episodes like, for example, Redux 1 and Redux 2, and also even Emily in the fifth season, which has another sort of Scully's in hospital, Mulder's in adventure sort of story. One of the things I don't like about Memento Mori is that it's got this really heavy emotional plotline, which is Scully's in hospital, she's diagnosed with cancer. There's every possibility that she's going to die as a result of what's being done to her. And you sort of had this before in One Breath in the second season, where Scully was returned from her abduction. And in One Breath, you had this really powerful emotional story arc about how Mulder, no matter what he does, there is nothing he can do that will bring her back except to be there for her physically and emotionally. And everything else he tries to do is completely meaningless and pointless. And I think that that episode really captured the sense of what it is to be near somebody who is dying or who is sick or is in hospital. And what didn't work for me with Memento Mori was the fact that it took that plot and it did the exact opposite. It basically had this plotline where Mulder was out and about doing funky poaching while Scully was facing her mortality. And it felt to me like it was a kind of it undermined or undercut the emotional power of the arc by having all these big twisty conspiracy elements going on. I think it would have been a much stronger episode if Mulder and Scully had been in the hospital room together, or if Mulder had acknowledged that the thing to do would be to stay with her, you know? I don't know.
I think the episode suffers from having four separate writers. So the tone of the episode shifts several times during the course of the hour, like from, you know, are we doing quiet, emotional, intimate scenes in the hospital? Are we doing, you know, action, mythology, drama? Or, you know, what are we doing? Like, I agree with you. It shifts from too many different types of stories, I think. There's this weird bit right in the middle where Mulder's stuck in a hallway in a secret lab facility, trying, you know, yelling at Langley. Is it Langley? I think it is over his radio, trying to get out of the corridor while this guy's shooting at him. I was like, geez, this doesn't feel like it's even in the same episode as Scully. Like, you know, meanwhile on the other side of town in a hospital. I think all the elements of this episode have already been done in, like you said, in previous episodes of The X-Files in previous seasons. Clone doctors, Mulder demanding the whereabouts of cigarette-smoking man from Skinner, Scully's name on secret paperwork. I feel like it's nothing new.
It is, and I mean, even Skinner points that out. Like, when Mulder shows up, he's like, I need you to give me the contact details of the cigarette-smoking man. And Skinner's kind of like, look, didn't we do this, like, 2 years ago?
Come on, Mulder. Yeah, I do think there are some great scenes, that standout scenes, like
yeah.
The scene between Scully and her mother, and her mother actually showing real anger.
And justifiable anger, I think, as well, which is really good drama, is when you have two actors in a scene who are basically tearing strips out of each other, but both of them are coming from a place that you can understand. And I think that works for... Sheila Larkin is great, and Anderson is phenomenal. This is the season that won her Primetime Emmy. And this is the episode, I think, that she submitted for consideration. Like, this was an episode that got nominated for Outstanding Writing as well. Like, this is a huge episode, I think, culturally, of The X-Files.
Yeah, her acting, like you said, her acting is amazing. Especially, I also think, in the scenes with Penny Northam, you know, Northern, I think her name is. There's a little scene initially when Penny recognises Scully, and I liked that. She sort of said, well, you know, we were both abductees together in that place when they're being tested. They never really touched on that again. Like, all these women were there at the same time being tested. Possibly none of them can remember, but at the time forming a bond with each other when they were, I guess, aboard a spaceship or in some secret government facility being tested on. So I thought that was an intriguing idea, which they don't really explore again, but I thought it was an intriguing idea. And Scully and Mulder, they have this lovely little scene at the end, you know, where they sort of comfort each other. And I like that. But so much of the episode is ruined for me by Scully's voiceover, you know. And also, like, when she's the voiceover is her writing in a diary to Mulder, right? And then when he finds it and he sort of says, oh, I read your diary, or I read what you wrote. And she just seems embarrassed. Like, even Scully knows that what she wrote was crap, you know, like, oh, please, I hope you didn't read it. I was going to throw it away. Oh, you read it.
Oh, don't worry. When she starts sending emails in the 9th season, this will seem just beautiful. This will seem like poetry.
She's a medical doctor. She's not a writer.
I think that shines through.
Yeah.
But I actually, to be honest, I quite like, there's one bit of that I quite like, which is the idea that where Scully talks about cancer as a thing that invades the body, an invader that becomes one with the invaded. I think that's a really nice sort of metaphor for the show's sort of anxieties as a whole, because the X-Files has this recurring theme of, like, infiltration and hybridization and sort of mutation and stuff. So obviously, like, the alien hybrids, the black oil is something that goes into you and becomes one with you and transforms you and stuff like that. Or even the idea of, like, corruption and evil as across the X-Files is something that tends to infect characters and transform them. And I mean, even in this episode, like, you have Skinner making a deal with a cigarette-smoking man that will infect him, you know, in a metaphorical sense in sort of the 4th season later on, and in a literal sense then with, say, Krycek in the 6th season. And I like this idea that, like, cancer becomes this physical medical representation of that corruption or that infection. But I do think, yeah, that the voiceover otherwise is a bit much.
Yeah, and there's also other things that bother me as well. I mean, like, for instance, the over that Mulder takes out of a little freeze-dried drawer, which is Scully's eggs, and sticks them in his pocket, and, you know, like, FYI.
That's sanitary, yeah.
Yeah, well, also, FYI, you can't keep human ova alive in a pocket, you know, you just can't. Like, egg freezing is actually a very, sort of very delicate procedure, and defrosting the eggs is a very delicate procedure. People don't just pull them out of a drawer and stick them in their pocket.
That's why the lone gunman could only afford one headset, because they spent so much on Mulder's funky poaching pants that were ova-safe.
The thing is, like, they return to this, you know, this
oh, in the 8th season, yeah, in Primanum,
yeah. And she's like, I took your eggs and I took them to a doctor. I'm like,
oh, I didn't tell you as well, which is really creepy, which is like, yeah, Scully, I've kind of had your ova for something like 2 to 3 years, depending on when this flashback takes place.
And also, this little scene is echoed in Emily, when he has the cure for Emily, but then just pockets it and, like, walks away. I'm like, Mulder, this is, there's all sort of, that's all sorts of problems here. I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you don't take, like, body tissue from somebody and then just put it in your pocket and walk away.
I think, you know? Mulder's magic pants is like a Twitter hashtag we need to get trending.
Mulder's magic pants. They hold all manners of medical miracles. Yeah, 2 Scully episodes. One slightly more appreciated than the other, perhaps. But both covering Scully's health, and both leading on to, like you said, later episodes and later themes. If you're interested in hearing more, the next episode is number 45, and that will be tomorrow, and that will be covering the episodes Kaddish and Unrequited. The XCast has a Twitter page, which is @the_X_cast, and a Facebook page and group, so join the group and you can find all sorts of X-Files related chats and discussion going on there. And until next time, trust no one.